Hello all, Seth Big here. Before we begin this episode, I would just like to say that this episode marks two important milestones that we have reached here at In the Great Khan's Tent. Firstly, this is the 40th episode we have reached, and secondly, we have reached 2,000 all-time downloads. Both could not have happened without the support of our listeners, our supporters, our well-wishers, and those who continue with us on our journey to examine the literature and folk literature alongside its history from the Middle East, Central Asia, South Asia, North Africa, Mongolia, and the Russian Far East. We will continue to strive to bring you the same informative, educational, and entertaining content that we have been doing. Thank you all, and hope you continue this journey with us. In light of reaching these milestones, I also have decided to update our cover art and logo. I would really appreciate your comments if you like this one or prefer our old one. Welcome in the Great Khan's Tent. History, literature, and storytelling. In the Great Khan's Tent is now available on YouTube. You can find us using this podcast name. Fear not, listeners, episodes will still be released on this podcast first, and it is only after a delay of a week that I will upload them onto YouTube. You can still find us on all your podcast providers first. If you have any suggestions, comments, or complaints, please be sure to email us at alllowercase@thegreatkhanstent@gmail.com. That is thegreatkhanstent@gmail.com. We would love to hear from our listeners. In this episode, we continue our exciting exploration of the 1001 Nights with the continuation of the story of Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, the distracted slave of love, with Nights 42 and 43. Once again, the characters of Harun al-Rashid and Jafar al-Barmaki appear, but their roles are superseded by our main characters, Ghanim and Kut al-Kulub. Harun al-Rashid appears in this tale as a khalifa who is more religiously oriented than before, with clear issues about being punished in the afterlife, with how many times both Kut al-Kulub and his main wife Zubaydah constantly are either referring to it or told by someone else about it. This indicates to me that this might have been told or written down when Harun al-Rashid was older and somewhat more mature than previously shown. We are also reintroduced to the character of Ghanim's mother and her sister Fitne as they appear lamenting the supposed loss of Ghanim. The concept of mistaken identity is continual here, with how often all three women characters overlook Ghanim due to the troubles he finds himself in and the state, both mentally and physically, he is reduced to due to his separation
with Kut al-Kulub.
In the next episode, we will conclude with our special series,
In the Great Khan's Tent Presents,
Tales from Central Asia, with episode 4. Fear not,
listeners,
we will have a new special series to replace this one
next month. A'udhu billah min ash-shaytan nir-rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Praise be to Allah, the Lord of the two worlds, and blessings and peace upon the Prince of the Prophets, our Lord and Master Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, whom Allah bless and preserve with abiding and continuing peace and blessing until the day of the faith. To proceed, the lives of former generations are a lesson to posterity, that a man may review the remarkable events which have happened to others and be admonished, and may consider the history of people of preceding ages and of all that hath befallen them and be restrained. Extolled be the perfection of him who hath thus ordained the history of former generations to be a lesson to those which follow. Such are the tales of 1001 Nights with their romantic stories and fables. Sherazad continued, "When Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, heard these words of Kut al-Kulub and discovered that she was the favorite of the Khalifa, he drew back in his awe of the Khalifa and sat alone at one side of the chamber, blaming himself and reflecting upon his situation, perplexed by love of her to whom he could not be united, and he wept from the violence of his desire and the fierceness of his passion and distraction, and began to complain of fortune and its injustice. He remained bewildered because of his love for an unattainable beloved, and the violence of his passion caused him to weep as he complained of the hostile assaults of time. Extolled be the perfection of him who causeth the hearts of the generous to be troubled with love, and endureth not the mean, which so much of it as equaleth the weight of a grain. Glory be to the one who kindles hearts with love for the beloved." He recited, "The heart of the lover wearies for his beloved. Unique in beauty, the loved one steals his wits. Men ask me, 'What is the taste of love?' 'Sweet,' I reply, 'but it contains torture.'" And upon this Kut al-Kulub rose to him and embraced and kissed him, and her heart being entirely captivated by his love, she revealed what she had hidden of the extent of her passion, and encircled his neck with her arms and kissed him again. But he withdrew from her embrace in his fear of the Khalifa. They then conversed a while, drowned in the sea of mutual love, and so remained until day, when Ghanim rose and went forth to the market as usual, and procured what was required, and returning to the house, found Kut al-Kulub weeping. But as soon as she beheld him, she ceased from her tears, and smiled, and said to him, "Thou hast made me desolate by thine absence, O beloved of my heart. I was lonely because of you, heart's darling," she said. "By Allah, this hour during which thou hast been away from me hath appeared as a year, for I cannot endure thy separation, and see I have shown thee my state through the violence of my passion. Arise therefore now, and mind not what hath happened, but take me as thy wife. Thanks to my deep love for you, I told you how things are with me, so come now, forget the past, and take me as you want." But he replied, "I seek refuge with Allah. This is a thing that cannot be. How should the dog sit in the place of the lion? What belongeth to my lord is forbidden me to approach." He then tore himself from her and sat apart, and she increased in love through his refusal. His abstinence increased her love for him, and she sat beside him, drinking with him and playing with him. They became drunk, and she longed to be possessed by him. So she sang these lines: "The infatuated lover's heart is almost shattered. How long will you turn away from me? You shun me though I am guilty of no fault. It is the habit of gazelles to play. Shunning, remoteness, constant separation, all this is more than a young man can bear." Ghanim wept, and she shared his tears, and they continued to drink until night, when Ghanim got up and spread two beds, each in a place by itself. "For whom is the second bed?" asked Kut al-Kulub. "For me," he replied, "and other is for you, as from this night on, this is the way in which we shall sleep, for everything that belongs to the master is forbidden to the slave." "No more of this," she said, "everything happens by the decree of fate." He refused to yield, and her heart burned with love. As her passion increased, she clung to him and said, "By Allah, we are going to sleep together." "Allah forbid," he exclaimed, and getting the better of her persistence, he slept alone until morning, with her love and passion increasing, and her longing becoming still more violent. Because of this prolonged delay in her union with him, Kut al-Kulub's sorrow and distress increased, and she recited these lines with a sad heart. Peerless in your beauty, what false charges do you bring, and who incited you to turn away from me? Yours is the ideal grace and every elegance. You move each heart to passion and empower sleeplessness over all eyelids. Fruit has been plucked from branches before you, branch of the thorn bush. How do you wrong me? I used to hunt gazelles, so how is it? I see them hunting hunters armed with shields. The strangest thing I have to tell of you is that I am infatuated, but you know nothing of my moans. Never allow me union. If I am jealous for you of yourself, how much more then of me? While life remains, I shall not say again, peerless in your beauty, what false charges do you bring? In this manner they passed 3 long months, and whenever she made any advances to him, he withdrew from her and said, "Whatever belongeth to the master is forbidden to the slave." Such was the case of the distracted slave of love, Ghanim, the son of Ayyub. Meanwhile, Zubaydah, during the absence of the Khalifa, having acted thus with Kut al-Kulub, became perplexed, saying within herself, "What shall I say to the Khalifa when he cometh and inquireth respecting her, and what shall be my answer to him?" She then called for an old woman who resided with her and acquainted her with her secret and said to her, "What shall I do now that Kut al-Kulub is no more?" The old woman answered, when she understood the affair, "Know, O my mistress, that the return of the Khalifa is near, but I will send to a carpenter and desire him to make a wooden image of a corpse, and they shall dig for it a grave, and thou shalt light candles and lamps around it, and command everyone who is in the palace to wear black, and order thy female slaves and eunuchs, as soon as they know of the Khalifa's return from his journey, to raise lamentations in the vestibules, and when he enters and asks the news, they shall answer him, 'Kut al-Kulub is dead, and may Allah abundantly compensate thee for the loss of her.'" And from the esteem with which she was regarded by our mistress, she hath buried her in her own palace. So when he heareth this, he will weep, and the event will distress him. Then he will cause the readers to sit up by night at her tomb to perform recitations of the Quran. And if he say within himself, "Surely the daughter of my uncle, through her jealousy, hath been led to destroy Kut al-Kulub, or the distraction of love overpower him," and he give orders to take her forth from the tomb, fear not from that, for if they dig down to the image in the form of a human being, and take it forth shrouded in costly grave clothes, and the Khalifa desire to remove the grave clothes from it to behold her, do thou prevent him, and the fear of the world to come will withhold him, and do thou say to him, "To behold her corpse uncovered is unlawful." Then he will believe her death, and will return her image to its place, and thank thee for thy conduct, and thou shalt escape, if it please Allah, from this difficulty. When Lady Zubaydah therefore heard what she said, she approved it, and bestowed upon her a dress of honor, and commanded her to do this, having given her a sum of money. So the old woman set about the business immediately, and ordered the carpenter to make for her an image as above described. And when it was finished, she brought it to the Lady Zubaydah, and she shrouded it, and lighted the candles and lamps, and spread the carpets around the tomb, and clad herself in black, ordering the female slaves to do the same. And the news was spread through the palace that Kut al-Kulub had died. Some time after this, the Khalifa returned from his journey and went up to his palace, but his mind was occupied only with Kut al-Kulub and seeing the pages and eunuchs and female slaves all clad in black. His heart was agitated, and when he entered the palace of the Lady Zubaydah and beheld her also clad in black, he inquired the reason for it, and they informed him of the death of Kut al-Kulub. Upon hearing this, he fell down in a swoon, and when he recovered, he asked where was her tomb, and the Lady Zubaydah answered, "Know, O Prince of the Faithful, that on account of the esteem in which she was held by me, I buried her in my palace." So the Khalifa, entering the palace in his traveling dress, proceeded to visit the tomb of Kut al-Kulub and found the carpet spread and the candles and lamps lighted. And when he beheld this, he thanked her for what she had done. But afterwards he became perplexed and wavered a little between belief and disbelief until suspicion overcame him. And he gave orders to open the tomb and take her out. When, however, he saw the grave clothes and was about to remove them that he may behold her, he feared Allah, whose name be exalted, and the old woman said, "Restore her to her place." Then immediately the Khalifa commanded to bring the professors of religion and law, the faqihs and Quran reciters, and the readers, and they performed recitations of the whole Quran at her tomb, while he sat by the side of it weeping until he became insensible. Night 42. Morning now dawned, and Shahrazad broke off from what she had been allowed to say. Then, when it was the 42nd night, she continued, "I have heard, O auspicious Shahanshah, that the Khalifa kept visiting the grave for a month. He continued to frequent the tomb for the space of a month, after which it happened that he entered the harem after the emirs and the viziers had dispersed from before him to their houses, and he slept a while, and a female slave sat at his head and another at his feet, and after sleep had overcome him, he awoke and opened his eyes and heard the damsel who was at his head say to her who was at his feet, 'Woe to thee, O Khayzaran! Wherefore, O Kudib al-Ban?' said the other. 'Our Lord,' rejoined the first, 'is ignorant of what hath happened, so he sitteth up by night at a tomb in which there is nothing but a carved image, the work of the carpenter.' 'And what then,' asked the other damsel, 'hath befallen Kut al-Kulub?' Her companion answered, 'Know that our mistress Zubaydah sent some benj by a female slave, and she stupefied her with it, and when the benj had taken effect upon her, she put her in a chest and sent her away with Sawab and Kafur, commanding them to throw her into the tomb.' Upon this, Khayzaran said, 'Woe to thee, O Kudib al-Ban! Is not the Lady Kut al-Kulub dead? Heaven preserve her youth from death,' answered Kudib al-Ban. 'I heard the Lady Zubaydah say that Kut al-Kulub was with a young merchant named Ghanim of Damascus, and that she had been with him, including this day, 4 months, and our Lord here weepeth and passeth sleepless nights at a tomb in which there is no corpse.' Thus they conversed together, while the Khalifa heard their words, and when they had finished their conversation, and he became acquainted with the event that this tomb was a false one, and that Kut al-Kulub had been with Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, for the space of 4 months, he was violently incensed, and arose and summoned the emirs of his court, whereupon the vizier Jafar al-Barmaki presented himself and kissed the ground before him, and the Khalifa said to him in anger, 'Descend, O Jafar, with a body of men, and inquire for the house of Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, and assault it suddenly, and bring him hither with my female slave, Kut al-Kulub, and I will assuredly torture him.' Ja'far replied, "I hear and obey," and went forth with his attendants and the wali also accompanying him, and they proceeded until they arrived at Ghanim's house. Ghanim had just before gone out and brought a pot of meat and was about to stretch forth his hand to eat of it with Kut al-Kulub when she looked out and found the house was beset on all sides, and the vizier and the wali and the officers of violence and the Mamluks with drawn swords were surrounding it as the black surrounds the pupil of the eye. And upon this she knew her tidings of her situation had reached the ears of the Khalifa, her lord, and she made sure of destruction. Her countenance became pale and her beauty changed, and looking towards Ghanim, she said to him, "O my beloved, save thyself. How shall I do?" said he, "and whither shall I flee when my wealth and means of sustenance are in this house?" But she answered, "Delay not, lest thou perish, and thy wealth also be lost." "O my mistress and light of mine eye," rejoined he, "how can I contrive to go forth when they are surrounding the house?" "Fear not," she answered, and she pulled off his clothes and clad him in worn-out, ragged garments, and taking the pot that had contained the meat, placed it upon his head, and put in it a little bread and a saucer of meat, and said to him, "Go forth by the help of this stratagem, and thou hast nothing to fear with respect to me, for I know what I am able to do with the Khalifa." When Ghanim therefore heard the words of Kut al-Kulub and the advice she gave him, he went forth through the midst of them, bearing the pot, and Providence protected him so that he escaped from the snares and injuries which menaced him by the blessing of his good conscience. Ghanim went out through the middle of Ja'far's men, carrying his basket with its contents, and as Allah the Shelterer sheltered him, he escaped from the evils that were plotted against him by virtue of his innocence. And when the vizier Ja'far arrived at the house, he dismounted from his horse and entered, and looked at Kut al-Kulub, who had adorned herself and filled a chest with gold and ornaments and jewels and rarities, such as were light to carry and of great value. And when Ja'far came in to her, she rose upon her feet and kissed the ground before him, saying to him, "O my master, the pen hath written what Allah hath decreed." "Master," she said, "Allah's decrees have been written down since past eternity." But Ja'far, when he beheld her situation, replied, "By Allah, O my mistress, he gave me no order but to arrest Ghanim, the son of Ayyub." And she said, "Know that he hath packed up some bales of merchandise and gone with them to Damascus, and I know nothing more than this, and I request thee to take care of this chest for me, and to convey it to the palace of the Prince of the Faithful." So Ja'far answered, "I hear and obey," and he took the chest and gave orders that it should be conveyed, together with Kut al-Kulub, to the palace of the Khalifa, treating her with honor and respect. This took place after they had plundered the house of Ghanim, and they went to the Khalifa, and Ja'far related to him all that had happened, whereupon the Khalifa appointed to Kut al-Kulub a dark chamber, and there lodged her, commissioning an old woman to serve her, for he imagined that Ghanim had acted dishonestly towards her, because he believed that Ghanim must have seduced her and slept with her. He then wrote a letter to Muhammad ibn Sulaiman al-Zaini, his deputy in Damascus, containing as follows: "As soon as this letter cometh to thy hands, thou shalt arrest Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, and send him unto me." So when the mandate was brought to him, he kissed it and put it upon his head, and caused it to be proclaimed through the marketplace. Whosoever desireth to plunder, let him repair to the house of Ghanim, the son of Ayyub. And they came to the house and found that the mother of Ghanim and his sister had made for them a tomb, and sat by it weeping, and they laid hold upon them, and plundered the house, and the mother and sister knew not the cause. And when they brought them before the Sultan, he inquired of them respecting Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, and they answered him, "For the space of a year we have obtained no tidings from him," and they restored them to their place. In the meantime, Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, the distracted slave of love, when his wealth had been seized, was perplexed and began to weep for himself so as to break his heart. He walked on and ceased not on his way to the close of day, suffering from excessive hunger and fatigue, until he arrived at a village, where he entered a mosque and seated himself upon a round mat, and he leaned his back against one of the walls of the building, and then threw himself down under the influence of extreme hunger and weariness. There he remained until the morning, his heart palpitating from want of food. Vermin attacked his body, while lice, attracted by the sweat, crawled over his body. His breath became fetid, and he was altogether changed. And the people of that village, coming to perform the morning prayers, found him lying there sick through want of food, yet exhibiting evident traces of former affluence. And when they approached him, they found him cold and hungry. They clad him, therefore, with an old garment, having ragged sleeves, and said to him, "Whence art thou, O stranger, and what is the cause of thine infirmity?" And when Ghanim opened his eyes and looked at them and wept, but he returned them no answer. Then one of them, knowing the violence of his hunger, went and brought him a saucer of honey and 2 cakes of bread, and he ate while they sat around him until the sun rose, when they departed to their several occupations. In this state he remained among them for a month, and his infirmity and disease increased. So the people, commiserating him, consulted together respecting his case, and agreed to transport him to the hospital at Baghdad. Now, while they were thus conversing, lo, 2 women beggars came in to him, and they were his mother and sister. And when he beheld them, he gave them the bread that was at his head, and they slept by him the next night, but he knew them not. And on the following day, the people of the village came to him, bringing a camel, and said to its owner, "Convey the sick person on the camel, and when thou hast arrived at Baghdad, put him down at the door of the hospital. Perhaps he may recover his health, and thou wilt receive a recompense." He answered them, "I hear and obey." So they brought forth Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, from the mosque, and placed him, with the round mat upon which he was sleeping, on the camel, and his mother and sister came to look at him among the other people, but they knew him not. Then observing him attentively, they said, "Verily he resembleth our Ghanim. Can he be this sick person or not?" But as to Ghanim, he awoke not until he was mounted on the camel, and he began to weep and moan, and the people of the village saw his mother and sister weeping for him, though they did not know him. Then his mother and sister journeyed onwards to Baghdad, while the camel driver also proceeded without stopping until he had deposited Ghanim at the door of the hospital, when he took his camel and returned. Ghanim remained lying there until the morning, and when people began to pass along the street, they beheld him. He had become so emaciated that his form resembled that of a toothpick, and the people ceased not to gaze at him until the sheikh of the market came and repelled them from him and said, "I will gain paradise by means of this poor person, for if they take him into the hospital, they will kill him in one day." He then ordered his young men to carry him, and they conveyed him to his house, where he spread for him a new bed and put for him a new cushion and said to his wife, "Serve him faithfully." She replied, "On the head," and she tucked up her sleeves and having heated for him some water, washed his hands and feet and body and clothed him in a vest of one of her female slaves. She then gave him to drink a cup of wine and sprinkled rose water upon him. So he recovered his senses and he remembered his beloved Kut al-Kulub and his anguish increased. Thus did it happen to Ghanim. Night 43. Morning now dawned, and Shahrazad broke off from what she had been allowed to say. Then, when it was the 43rd night, she continued, "I have heard, O auspicious Shahanshah. Now, as to Kut al-Kulub, when the Khalifa, incensed against her, had her lodged in the dark chamber, she remained there in the same state for 80 days, and it happened that the Khalifa passed one day by that place, and heard her reciting verses, and when she had finished her recitation of them, she exclaimed, "O my beloved, O my Ghanim, how kind art thou, and how chaste is thy disposition. Thou hast acted with kindness unto him who hath injured thee, and hast guarded the honor of him who hath violated thine, and hast protected his harem, and he hath enslaved both thee and thy family. But thou wilt surely stand with the Prince of the Faithful before a just judge, and thou wilt obtain justice against him on the day when the judge shall be Allah and the witnesses the angels." "Ghanim, my darling, how good you are and how chaste. You did good to one who wronged you. You preserved the honor of one who dishonored you. You guarded his womenfolk while he took you and your family as prisoners. There must come a time when you and the commander of the faithful will stand before a righteous ruler. You will demand justice against him on a day when the judge will be the Lord Allah, great and glorious, and the witnesses will be the angels." And when the Khalifa heard her words and understood her complaint, he knew that she was injured, and he entered his palace and sent Masrur, the eunuch, to fetch her. And when she came before him, she hung down her head with weeping eye and sorrowful heart, and he said to her, "O Kut al-Kulub, I see that thou complainest of my oppression and accuse me of tyranny and thinkest that I have injured him who hath acted kindly unto me. Who then is he who hath guarded my honor and I have violated his, and who hath protected my harem and I have enslaved his?" She answered him, "Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, for he hath not attempted any dishonest action towards me by thy beneficence, O Prince of the Faithful." Upon this the Khalifa exclaimed, "There is no strength, no power, but in Allah," and then added, "O Kut al-Kulub, desire of me what thou wilt, and I will grant thy wish." So she replied, "I desire of thee, my beloved, Ghanim, the son of Ayyub." And when he heard her words, he said, "I will cause him to be brought hither, if it be the will of Allah, in honor." "O Prince of the Faithful," she rejoined, "when thou shalt have caused him to be brought, wilt thou present me to him?" He answered, "When I have had him brought, I will present thee to him, the present of a generous man who will not revoke his gift." So she said, "O Prince of the Faithful, permit me to search about for him. Perhaps Allah may unite me with him." And he replied, "Do as thou wilt." Upon this she rejoiced and went forth, taking with her 1,000 pieces of gold, and visited the sheikhs and gave alms for the sake of Ghanim. And on the following day she went to the market of the merchants and gave to the chief of the market some money, saying to him, "Bestow it in alms upon the strangers." Then again, in the following week, she went forth, taking with her 1,000 pieces of gold, and entering the market of the goldsmiths and jewelers, summoned the chief of the market, and he came, and she gave him 1,000 pieces of gold, and said to him, "Bestow it in alms upon the strangers." Whereupon the chief, who was the sheikh of the market before mentioned, looked at her, and said to her, "Wilt thou go with me to my house to look at a young stranger there, and see how elegant he is, and how perfectly charming? For it is probable that he is Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, the distracted slave of love." But the chief had no knowledge of him, and imagined that he was a poor person involved in debt, whose wealth had been taken from him, or a lover parted from his beloved. And when she heard his words, her heart beat, and her affections were engrossed by him, and she answered, "Send with me someone to conduct me to thy house." So he sent with her a young boy, who conducted her to the house where the stranger was lodged, and she thanked him for doing so. And when she entered the house and saluted the chief's wife, the latter arose and kissed the ground before her, for she knew her. Then Kut al-Kulub said to her, "Where is the sick person who is with you?" And she wept and answered, "Here he is, O my mistress, but he is of a respectable family, and exhibiteth traces of former affluence." And Kut al-Kulub looked towards the bed upon which he was lying, and regarded him narrowly, beheld him as though he were Ghanim himself, but his condition was changed, and he had become so emaciated that he resembled a toothpick, and the truth of his case was disguised from her, so that she did not discover him to be the person whom she thought. But she was moved with compassion for him, and she wept and exclaimed, "Verily, strangers are objects of pity, though they be emirs in their own countries." She then ordered for him supplies of wine and medicines, and sat at his head a while, and mounted and returned to her palace. And she continued to go forth to every market for the purpose of searching for Ghanim. Soon after, the chief of the market brought the mother of Ghanim and his sister Fitneh, and went with them to Kut al-Kulub, and said to her, "O most charitable lady, there have entered our city this day a woman and a girl of respectable origin, bearing evident traces of former affluence, but they are clad in garments of haircloth, and each of them hath a wallet hung to her neck, and their eyes are weeping, and their hearts sorrowful. So I have brought them unto thee, that thou mayest give them refuge, and preserve them from the disgrace of beggary, for they are not persons suited to ask alms of the sordid, and if it please Allah, we shall enter paradise by their means." "By Allah, O my master," she replied, "thou hast made me long to behold them. Where are they? Order them to come in." So upon this, Fitneh and her mother came in to Kut al-Kulub, who, when she saw them and observed that they were both distinguished by beauty, wept for them and said, "By Allah, they are persons of an affluent family, and traces of wealth are conspicuous in their appearance." "O my mistress," replied the chief of the market, "we love the poor and indigent for the sake of future recompense, and probably the extortioners have oppressed these two persons and plundered them of their wealth and ruined their houses." Then these two females wept violently, remembering Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, the distracted slave of love. Their wailing increased, and Kut al-Kulub wept with them, and the mother of Ghanim exclaimed, "We pray to Allah to unite us with him whom we seek, and he is my son Ghanim, the son of Ayyub." When Kut al-Kulub, therefore, heard these words, she knew that this woman was the mother of her beloved, and that the other was his sister, and she wept until she fell down in a swoon. When she recovered, she approached them and said to them, "Ye have nothing to fear, for this day is the first of your prosperity and the last of your adversity. Therefore grieve not." She then ordered the chief of the market to take them to his house, and to let his wife conduct them into the bath, and attire them in handsome clothing, and take care of them, and treat them with the utmost honor, and she gave him a sum of money. Are you interested in getting the book you just published reviewed? Writing some piece of literature and need help getting it out there and promoted? Interested in sharing what piece of literature we should cover next? Well, fret not. In the Great Khan's Tent is now available on Patreon, where your contribution can help in growing this podcast. For as low as $3 a month, a price less than a good, and I mean good, cup of coffee, you can help contribute to the growth of this podcast. Every bit helps, but as always, it is not necessary to do so, but will be appreciated. Find the Patreon link on our website, on our social media accounts, or email us and we can send it to you. Thank you. Welcome to the vocabulary section for this episode. First, let's look at some of the terms that were used in this episode. Zubaydah. Zubaydah bint Ja'far ibn al-Mansur was the best known princess and wife and cousin of Harun al-Rashid, remembered for a series of wells, reservoirs, and artificial pools that provided water for pilgrims going to Mecca. Vestibules. An antechamber, hall, or lobby next to the outer door of a building. Recitations. The action of repeating something aloud from memory. Emirs. A title of various Muslim, mainly Arab, rulers, or a Muslim, usually an Arab, military commander or local chief. Bench. An obsolete form of bhang or cannabis. Faqih. A Muslim theologian versed in the religious law of Islam. Fitne means either temptation, strife, trial, persecution, seduce, tempt, or lure away. Now, let's look at some of the vocabulary used in this episode. Perplexed, completely baffled or very puzzled. Extolled, praise enthusiastically. Causeth, third person singular simple present indicative form of cause. Endueth, an archaic form of endows. Procured, obtain something especially with care or effort. Requisite, made necessary by particular circumstances or regulations, or a thing that is necessary for the achievement of a specific end. Desolate, deserted of people and in a state of bleak and dismal emptiness, or make someone feel utterly wretched and unhappy. Inquireth, ask for information from someone or look into. Lamentations, the passionate expression of grief or sorrow or weeping. Esteem, respect and admiration typically for a person. Bestowed, confer or present an honor, right, or gift. Agitated, feeling or appearing troubled or nervous. Befallen, of something bad happened to someone. Stupefied, make someone unable to think or feel properly. Incensed, very angry or enraged. Countenance, a person's face or facial expression. Contrive, create or bring about an object or a situation by deliberate use of skill and artifice. Stratagem, a plan or scheme especially used to outwit an opponent or achieve an end. Mitz, in the middle of. Providence, the protective care of God or of nature as a spiritual power. Snares, a thing likely to lure or tempt someone into harm or error. Injuries, damage to a person's feelings. Menaced, threaten especially in a malignant or hostile manner. Conscience, an inner feeling or voice viewed as acting as a guide to the righteous or wrongness of one's behavior. Bales, a bundle tightly wrapped around and bound with cords or ropes. Commissioning, give an order for or authorize the production of something. Mandate,
an authoritative command, especially of formal order from a superior court or official to an inferior one. Tidings, news or information. Restored, bring back a previous right, practice, custom, or situation. Weariness, extreme tiredness or fatigue. Palpitating, of the heart beating rapidly, strongly, or irregularly. Fetid, smelling extremely unpleasant. Affluence, great wealth and abundance. Infirmity, physical or mental weakness. Commiserating, express or feel sympathy or pity or sympathizing. Wilt, archaic second person singular of will. Convey, transport or carry to a place. Attentively, while paying close attention. Emaciated, abnormally thin or weak, especially of illness or a lack of food. Repelled, be repulsive or distasteful to. Disposition, a person's inherent qualities of mind and character. Violated, bleak or fail to comply with a rule or formal agreement. Thine, archaic form of yours. Alms, money or food given to poor people. Exhibiteth, manifest or deliberately display a quality or a type of behavior. Narrowly, by only a small margin, barely. Beggary, a state of extreme poverty. Sordid, modeling ignoble actions and motives, arousing moral distaste and contempt. Conspicuous, standing out so as to be clearly visible. Adversity, difficulties or misfortune. Grieve, suffer grief. Bewildered, perplexed and confused or weary, puzzled. Abstinence, the fact or practice of restraining oneself from indulging in something. Infatuated, possessed with an intense but short-lived passion or determination or admiration for someone. Persistence, firm or obstinate continuance in a course of action in spite of difficulty or opposition. Peerless, unequaled or unrivaled.
In the Great Khan's Tent is now available on Ko-fi. If you are interested in supporting this podcast, please click on the link available on our many social media platforms or email us. Why not donate to our Ko-fi to show your appreciation? Every bit helps, and we thank you for your continued support. We love that our listeners love listening to us. This episode has been written, edited, and produced by Saf Beg. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day and or night. And may the journeys on which you are set upon be fruitful. Thank you for listening.